Hi, welcome to the Chaz Palminteri Show. You know, so many people ask me questions, not only about, acting, writing, directing, about life. You know, all my friends, you know, there's always that one guy you go to for advice. For whatever reason, I'm the guy. Now, I've been in therapy for 30 years, and I could tell you who he is. I mean, I don't mind. His name is Dr. Phil Stutz. He's in L.A. He wrote some great books called The Tools, The Five Tools. If it wasn't for him, please believe me, I probably wouldn't be here. No, I definitely wouldn't be here. Anyway, in fact, I saw him because, here I go again on my stories. I saw him because I was just happening with Bronx Tale at the time, and I knew I was going to be famous soon. So I said, you know what? There's a lot of questions I have. I think I should talk to somebody. Now, what kind of logic is that? You know what? That's neighborhood logic. You know, I knew something was going to happen. So I said, I think I should talk to somebody because this thing is going to blow up. So I started talking to him. I said, I'll only speak to him for like 5 months, whatever, 6 months. I'll be done. 30 years later, 32 years later, here I am. And he even said to me, he said, you know what, Chaz, you would have made a great shrink. And I said, why is that? He goes, because you're real clear and, you know, the way you talk. And I actually talked to him, so it's great. So I thought I'd do this episode about neighborhood logic to do this show. Sometimes, you know, you don't have to see a shrink. Just think neighborhood. Neighborhood logic. So that's why I ask for people to send in questions and give you my advice. This is neighborhood advice, you know. If you like it, you like it. You don't like it, don't do it. So let's see on the monitor here what the first question is. Hey, Chaz, my wife is always pissed off at me. No matter what I do, I can't make her happy. What do I do? Oh, shit. You know, there are some people. First of all, are you doing everything you could do? Let's be fair here now. You know, a marriage is like a garden. You know, you got to water the flowers. If you don't water the flowers die. But both gardeners have to do it. Just can't be one person. Now, I don't know your wife. I don't know anything about the story. She's always pissed off at you. I don't know why she's pissed off at you. Maybe you deserve it. I don't know. But first, you have to look at yourself and make sure you're not pissing her off for some reason. Okay? Now, there are times when there are people in this world, who are born without a happiness plug, I call it. That means there's a plug in them that no matter how much goodness you put in them, they can never be happy. And you know who you are. And you know if you're married to one of those, girl or guy. No matter what you do, they just can't be happy. Everything is a hassle. Everything. Everything is a big hassle. And I'm talking to men and women now. Not just women, both, men and women. Oh, you want to go out tonight? No, not tonight. You're going to wear that red dress? Yes, why? You don't like the dress? No, I like the dress. You hate the dress? Oh, God. Everything is a big deal. And they, again, man or woman, have to pontificate about everything. They're right, even if they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. They're right. Now, being married to a hassle-oriented person is a nightmare. So my neighborhood advice to you is, before you get married or fall in love or fall in a deep relationship, you got to make sure that person is not hassle-oriented. Because if she or he is, wow. You got a tough life ahead of you. Because you see, life is hard as it is. Life is hard is when everything is right. When everything's going great, life is hard. As my friend Sally Slick used to say, life is a shit sandwich. You either eat it or starve. Very eloquently put, I think. And that's the way life is, you know? So, but now if you have someone who makes everything a big deal, wow, that's a problem. But you have to make sure, and I go back, to this gentleman who called, who sent me a note. She's always pissed off. No matter what I do, I can't make her happy. You have to look at yourself first and make sure you're doing all the right things, that you're watering the garden. And then if you're doing everything correctly or almost correctly, and she's still upset, then you have a problem. She has to speak to someone. She has to go on medication, or you got to get her whacked. You know, you got to clip her. That's it. I mean, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. No, you can't do that. Don't say that. Why did I say that? That's the neighborhood comes out of me. I can't help it. just think about that. You know, just look at yourself and make sure you're doing everything right. Then I'm sure she'll be okay. Now, let's get another question from someone out there. Don't forget, it's the Chaz Parmenteri Show at gmail.com. And our next question is, Chaz, I know you know these people. Oh, God. Chaz, I see where this is going. Chaz, I know you know these people. My husband is a degenerate gambler. Is it possible for our marriage to survive? Wow. Well, if you're willing to put up with a lot of shit, honey, then you could survive it, I guess. But I don't know if you're going to be happy, and I don't know if he could be happy. I mean, I grew up with degenerate gamblers, as you know. Eddie Mush was one of the great degenerate gamblers. But he lost all the time, so that was easy. And he was never married. But when you say the word degenerate gambler, that's, you know what a degenerate gambler is. My friend Dave Salerno, he played Frankie Coffee Cake in the movie, A Bronx Tale. I love Dave, but he was a degenerate gambler. Totally. Give you an example. One time he came over to me, he said, Chaz, I got this tip on a race at Belmont, it was. He goes, you got to lend me $100. I mean, this is back, you know, in the late 60s. You got to lend me $100. 1969, what am I, 18? You got to lend me $100. He was a little older than I was. He goes, I promise you, my brother-in-law is coming home tonight from Indiana. I'll never forget it. I'll give you the $100 tonight. I said, this means a lot to me. This is money I saved. Dave, you can't. Tonight, you'll get the money. He's coming home from Indiana. I said, okay. I go home. I get the money. I give it to him. I'm a young kid. He's older. I want to impress him. I want to be with the big guys. I give him $100. We get in a car. We go to Belmont. On our way there, I hear him talking. Don't worry. Thanks for the $100. My brother said he's coming in this week. He's going to be here. Now I'm saying to myself, this week? He just said, but he said tonight. Now it's this week. I said, all right, don't say nothing. Now we get out of the car. We're walking towards the thing. We're walking towards the window to bet. He goes, it's going to be great. Don't worry. We're going to win. We're going to win. I'm telling you, this tip is not going to lose. Don't worry. My brother-in-law is going to come in. I don't know when, this month, but he's coming in. Now he's saying this month. And I said, well, wait a minute. We went from tonight to this week. Now it's this month. He bets the horse. The horse is going around. I'm screaming and yelling for the horse. The horse was named, because I put it in the movie, Bronx Tale, Kryptonite. I'll never forget it. Kryptonite. And we're screaming, Kryptonite, Kryptonite. Come on, Kryptonite. Dead last, the horse comes in. You hear me out there? Dead last. So I turned to him. I said, Dave, what about that money? He goes, hey, don't break my balls for this $100. I don't know when my brother's coming in. That's a degenerate gambler. They swear on their lives that this is the truth and they're lying. So, honey, I feel for you. How could you ever believe this man? How could you ever believe him? Degenerate gamblers lie. They will push their mother off a cliff for the money, thinking that it'll be okay, somebody will catch her. I'm telling you, my friend, I can't say his name, because it ended up not well. But he borrowed money off these wise guys, and they were going to hurt him. And then he went to another crew and borrowed money off them to pay that crew. So what does he do? He takes their money and leaves town. Think about that. I mean, what's the worst thing you could do? Not only beat one crew, you just beat two crews. They're both after you. I remember I was out in L.A. I just got there in 86. And they called me up. And they said, we're looking for you know who. We heard he might be out in L.A. And I said, no, I haven't seen him. And they went, yeah, you wouldn't tell us anyway. They said, if you see him, please tell him that we don't want the money. Tell him that. Even if he gets the money and pays us double, we don't want it. We know what we have to do to him. And I was like, all right, I'll tell him. And I didn't know where he was, but I got the message to some people to tell him. And they told him. And for years, we never saw each other. We never saw anybody. He left the neighborhood. I didn't know where he was. Cut to 2008, I'm doing the Broadway show. A Bronx Tale, the one-man show on Broadway. And I get a stage manager walks over to me, and she said, so-and-so is here. And I said, who's that? She said to me, you know. And I realized who it was. And he came in the dressing room by himself. His hair was all white. And I looked at him. I said, hey, how are you? We hugged and we kissed. And this was the conversation. Hey, where you living? Are you married? Could we see each other again? Wouldn't say a word. Wouldn't say a word. And now he left. And I'm saying to myself, wow. Lost all his friends. He was married. Lost his wife. Lost his children. The closeness with his kids. For what? For gambling. And this was a smart guy. This guy went to a big Catholic college. A smart guy. Could have been anything he wanted to be. But you know what? He was a degenerate gambler. And it never, ever worked out. Because he wouldn't stop. I got a great friend of mine. And I'm sure he won't mind if I say his name. My friend Squiggy. And he was in the Bronx Tale. A lot of these guys, we put him in the Bronx Tale. Squiggy was in a Bronx Tale, and he's in the crap game scene. And Squiggy was a degenerate gambler. Not anymore. He went to the whole anonymous thing. And I'm going to have him as a guest on the show on some of the coming episodes, my friend Squiggy. And we call him Squiggy because his last name was Squillante. Rafi Squillante, one of the classic characters of all time. Bob met him once, said, got to be in the movie, got to put him in the movie. And we put him in the crap game scene. We did the crap game scene. You want to talk about degenerate gamblers? De Niro had to use real money. Nobody uses real money in movies. Nobody. But Bob said, I want real money. I want the smell of it. I want the taste of it. I want them to feel it. I want the sound of real money. That's Bob. So what we did was the prop person got about $10,000, I think, in 20s and singles and fives. And we distributed out to all the wise guys, you know, who happened to be a lot of real guys because Bob didn't want to use actors in the movie, right? Here I go off again. So we give everybody the money. It takes us 3 days to shoot the scene. 3 days, that one scene. At the end of the first day, the prop guy walks over to Bob and says, excuse me, Bob, but I'm sorry, but we're $1,200 short. And he goes, what? He goes, well, nobody gave us back all the money. They stole the money. The guys in the scene kept the money. $1,200. So the next day they come in, and we say, guys, you can't keep the money. The money's part of the scene. And, oh, it was a mistake. I didn't realize it. You know, come on. They can't help themselves. Degenerate gamblers cannot help themselves. They will say anything to get the money. And I say this to that young lady out there. So all I say to you is, if you're married to a degenerate gambler, I guess he has to seek help. He has to go somewhere. He has to get professional help, because unless he does that, I don't see your marriage working out. Let's see what the next question is. The next question is, what is it? My name is, we don't have to say his name. I'm in love with a wise guy's wife. Soon to be wife. What should I do? What should you do? If I were you, I would say, if somebody finds out about this, you should put a bullet in your fucking head. That's what you should do. Save yourself the trouble. Why are you even doing this? For what reason are you doing this? There's other women in the world. You want to be in love? This guy's going to marry this young girl and you're in love with her? And I know what you're saying. You know, he don't deserve her. I'm a legitimate guy. I know just the whole deal. What you're saying in your head. I could be with her. No, you can't. No, you can't. How about her? Is she in love with you? Is she in love with this guy? I mean, are you out of your mind? Are you crazy? I mean, one thing we learned growing up in the neighborhood was neighborhood logic. That's what this series, this show is about. Neighborhood logic. Why are you doing this? Why? Forbidden fruit tastes the sweetest? Sure it does. But it'll also get you killed. So what are you doing? I remember I was at a nightclub once. And there was a guy there. And now he wasn't a maid guy, but he was a soldier with the boys. Wasn't a maid. And his girlfriend, I saw her outside the club at where we were leaving. And I was in the band singing, so I left at the very end. And she was standing there waiting for a taxi. Back then, there was no Uber. So she knew me, and I knew her. She said, Chaz, I'm sorry, you know, my girlfriend's supposed to come, but she met some guy. Would you give me a lift home? Now, I knew she lived in the neighborhood where I lived. So I said, oh, sure. She got in the car, and I drove her back. And halfway home, I was playing at a club called the Joker's Wild up in Pelham Parkway. So it wasn't a long ride, maybe 10 minutes. Halfway home, I realized what I just did. She's in the car with me. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm dropping her off. This does not look good. This does not look good. So now I'm like, oh boy. And I said, okay, you know, I could tell you, her name was Marie. And I said, Marie, okay, well, let me drop you right off. We pull up in front of a house and she looks at me. She goes, I really appreciate taking me home. And I'm saying, great, it's great. It was my pleasure. Okay, she's staying in the car. She's like flirting with me. And I'm saying, yes, I got to go. I got to go. And she was gorgeous. But you know what? I knew I had to get her out of the car. I had to. What is that? Neighborhood logic. 4 o'clock in the morning, somebody walks by and sees me with her. What am I going to say? Oh, I just happened to drive her home? What is this guy going to say to me? Are you kidding me? You drive my girl home by yourself at 4 in the morning? Oh, really? No matter what I say or do, what does your neighborhood logic tell you? Don't do it. Don't do it. Because the little head could destroy the big head. And I'm telling you right now, I said that in Bronx Tale. Sometimes the little head tells the big head what to do, and the big head should think twice. Because all the blood runs out of your brain and runs down there. And you forget everything. But you know what? You won't forget it. Isn't it strange how you just don't forget that when you want to sleep with somebody? But as soon as you finish, oh my God, what did I do? Oh, Jesus Christ, somebody help me. I mean, once you do your business, it's over. That's it. Reality hits you in the face. And more than reality is going to hit you in the face. A slap is going to hit you in the face by you know who. So I tell you guys out there and the girls, use your neighborhood logic. Use your street sense. And if you don't grow up in a neighborhood like I did, watch the show. And then you'll learn. You'll learn what I mean when I say neighborhood logic. The best lesson I learned from the neighborhood is not to believe anyone. Always don't trust everyone because there's always an agenda. Everyone in my neighborhood always had an agenda. And I think that's what helped me too when I made the deal with Bronx Tale. When I would sit across the table, I would always watch them and say, they're lying. They had to prove to me they were telling the truth. I had a friend, Nicky Branch. Now, Nicky Branch, they call him Nicky Branch because he was really skinny. He was like a branch. So they call him Nicky Branch. Nicky Branch was a great guy, but another gambler. So one day he wanted to go to the track, and he came over to us, and he said to me, he goes, Chaz, can I borrow your car? And I said, no, I'm not lending you my car. So my friend, Fat Ricky, was there. He was next to me, my friend Fat Ricky. And Ricky goes, and he was a degenerate gambler. So he said, Ricky, come on, I got to go to the track. I got to make this bet. I got to meet these people. You understand. So what does Ricky do? He gives him his car. Was it a new car? We didn't have money back then, but it was a nice car. And I think it was like a 65 Oldsmobile or something. So Nicky Branch, he says, I swear to God, I'll be back in a couple hours. I just got to go to track, meet the guys. Ricky lends him the car. We wait. Afternoon comes, nothing. Nighttime comes, nothing. We're walking around laughing on the corner. We're making fun of Ricky saying, hey, Nicky Branch sold your car. We figured he sold the car, right? Who comes walking down the block by himself, walking down the block, is Nicky Branch. Nicky Branch walks over to Fat Ricky and goes, you got some nerve giving me that car. Ricky goes, what? Let me tell you something, he says to him. I saved your life, Ricky. I saved your life with that car. Ricky goes, what are you talking about? Where's my car? Nicky goes, where's your car? The brakes were horrible in that car. I totaled it. I smashed it to the side of a building, but thank God that could have been you. And we're like looking at him going, is he just saying this? He totaled the car. He was drunk, coming back, and totaled my friend Ricky's car and then convinced him that you're lucky that you weren't in it. I saved your life. That's a degenerate gambler. These are the guys that I met.
Who sold the store?
What's that?
The store.
Oh, my God. Who stole another degenerate gambler? We're on the degenerate gambler things. And again, I hope this young lady is listening. There was a luncheonette in my neighborhood. My friend used to go there all the time. Every day, he would eat there, have lunch there, dinner there, single guy. So finally, the owner kind of trusted him because he was there every day. He said to me, he said, listen to me. Could you, watch the store and watch the help, take over the store while I'm gone? For 5 weeks, I'm going to Italy. My friend says, yes, I'll take care of the store. This guy's a degenerate gambler. He's given him the store for 5 weeks, folks. Listen to this, okay? He gives it to him for 5 weeks. This guy goes away on vacation with his wife and family. During the 5 weeks, the first or second week, he sells the store. Listen to me. Sells it to a guy in the neighborhood, a friend that he knew. Gets a deed, the whole thing with a lawyer, schemes the whole thing. Sells it to this one guy. This guy buys the store, gives my friend a hunk of money. Now it's his store, right? He realizes after the first week, he hears in the neighborhood that, hey man, he doesn't own the store for you to buy. He realizes that he got duped, right? What does he do? He sells it to his brother. You hear me? His brother. Because he wanted to get his money back. He sells it to his brother. His younger brother buys the store. This goes on in the 5 weeks. This guy's away. This guy comes back with his wife and kid, walks into the store and says, where's Eddie? He says, what do you mean? Oh, Eddie was the guy, the first guy. He goes, where's Eddie? He said, Eddie's not here. He said, who's running the store? He goes, what store? He goes, this is my store. My brother sold it to me. He goes, who's your brother? He tells him who his brother is. He goes, no, this is my store. I own the store. Now there's a fight. The cops got to come. It's insanity. This is what happens when you get involved with a degenerate gambler, folks. I'm telling you, it's...
Last one. What about the three brothers?
The three brothers? What was that?
The wake.
Oh, the wake. Oh, my God.
Can you tell that?
Yeah, I could tell that story. My son Dante, because he's been hearing all these stories all his life. So we're at a wake, right? So this wise guy dies. And the three brothers are there. It's a true story, folks. When I tell you these stories, they're true stories. Now, the father said, when I die, I want you all to put a $100 bill in my pocket. My suit pocket, the side pocket. I want to die with $300 on me in case I need it. That's what he said. This was a known story. They said, Dad, when you die, that we're going to do that. So, P.S., the guy's in his 80s. He dies. Now, the three brothers, the younger brother was the degenerate gambler. So, the first brother goes in there. This is a true story. First brother goes there. Takes the $100 bill, C-note, puts it in his pocket. Second brother walks up, takes $100, puts it in his pocket. Third brother's up there, and he's there a little too long. Now, he's a degenerate gambler. The two older brothers know something was up. So they go over there, and they said, did you put $100 in? He said, yeah, I put $100 in. They said, did you put $100 in? He says, I put $100 in. They open up the thing. They look. What he did was, he took out the $200 and put in a check-in for $300. That's a degenerate gambler, folks. Oh, God. You imagine that? His father, his dying wish, $300. He took the $200 out, kept it for himself, and wrote a check for $300. And you know what? They were laughing because the check would have bounced. He wasn't even good for the check. It was a phony check. Degenerate gamblers, neighborhood logic, don't trust them. We had a store, Butchie Cans. Butchie Cans was a great guy. He owned a grocery store. They call him Butchie Cans because all the cans in the store, you know, that's how they get these names. And Muzzy came in once, my friend Muzzy, and he walked in. He says, hey, and he was the degenerate gambler. He said, Butchie, could you cash this check? And we all went, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, like, are you kidding? He goes, no, it's a cashier's check. It's a check I got from the company. It's good. So Butchie looks at the check and it wasn't the check. It was the other half of the check, the receipt. You know, a check comes with two, you know, you tear it, but it was just the receipt. And Butchie says, Muzzy, this is not a check. It's a receipt. So Muzzy goes, check, receipt. What's the difference? You're not getting the money anyway. Oh, my God. So I know I went off on one of my stories. So to that young lady out there, could you have a happy life with a degenerate gambler? Probably not, honey. So if I were you, I would say, I can't tell anybody to leave somebody if you love him, but I would say either he gets help or you're going to have to leave him because you're going to have a life of pure torture and agony. And he will never, ever tell you the truth. It's neighborhood logic, folks. I know you can see a shrink and you can see a shrink and spend $500 an hour, or you could send your emails to me, Chaz Palminteri, the Chaz Palminteri Show at gmail.com. Forget spending $500 an hour for a shrink, because I get right to the heart of it. What's the right way to go about this? Because sooner or later, when you marry a degenerate gambler, an alcoholic, a guy who is a serial cheater, it's just not going to work out. You know, that's the hard thing about, you know, being happy. You got to sacrifice. It's called delayed gratification. That's what it's really called, folks. It's like there are guys and women who like to cheat. And you see somebody that you meet and that you really like to be with. But you have to just say no. Because if you don't, you get in trouble. You do. And if you think you're not, you will. Because people a lot smarter than you and me, and smarter than a lot of very, very intelligent people, get caught. And what's worse is that you know if you're doing the wrong thing. You know. And it kind of chips away at your soul. And you kind of hate yourself for it in the end. So I say do the right thing. If you have someone and you're in love, try to do the right thing, because in the end, you'll lose. You'll really lose. And we all been there, and we all screwed up, all of us. But the idea is to learn from your mistakes. What's that old saying that everybody says, you know, those who forget history are doomed to repeat it. You know, it's a classic line. So if you don't really change your ways, you got to expect the same results. Neighborhood logic saved me every time. I remember when I was meeting with all these big producers and they said, well, we'll put in the contract, best efforts to get you the role. And I said, best efforts? What does that mean? I said, that's just another way of saying, we're going to fuck you, but we don't want to tell you now. That's all that means. We're going to screw you, but it's just not now. Later. Best efforts. I said, no. I said, no, I have to be play and pay. There's a thing in Hollywood, it's called play or pay. And play or pay means they once they hire you, even if you don't make the movie with them, they still have to pay you. But that wasn't good enough for me. I said, my deal has to be play and pay. So they can't make the movie without me. And, I was able to get that because... Let me drink some water here for a second. Michigan. My daughter's in Michigan. She just got in. She's going to Michigan. Go Blue. That's all I got to say. Anyway. And I teach her neighborhood logic and my son neighborhood logic all the time. But I knew that if I didn't have that in the contract, I was going to get screwed. But where was the power that I had? It was because I wrote the script. If I didn't write the script, A Bronx Tale, I never would have been in it. And I know that. No matter how good I thought I was as an actor, they would have gotten rid of me. So the real power was the script. That's the power in Hollywood, is the script. Nobody could get hired. Nobody could get fired. Nobody can get an act. They can't cast actors. Nothing happens until they have a script. So when you write the script, that's where the power is. Where was I? Did I just go off on a rant somewhere? Yeah. No, we were talking about, how did it help me in Hollywood? That's right. It helped me in Hollywood because when I was sitting across the table from them, I knew when I was being bullshitted. I knew it. My street sense told me, this guy's going to screw you. And that was totally opposite when I met Robert De Niro, that I knew. I looked him in the eyes and I could tell that he was telling the truth. And he did tell the truth. And I shook his hand, and that's the way it was. But I really do believe that my neighborhood logic got me through that. If I wasn't from the neighborhood, I don't know if I would have been able to navigate that whole thing. Also, I was 38 years old, 39, so I was older. That's why I think it's a shame when people make it when they're 18, 19, 20. I've seen some very, very talented actors who are young actors who destroyed their lives because they couldn't handle it. They ended up in rehab and then ended up in jail. But then you get the other actors, the young actors who were able to handle it. Ron Howard was very successful as a young adult, a young kid, and then on Happy Days, and then as a great director. Leonardo DiCaprio, Leo always, you know, was able to handle it, was way beyond his years, able to understand the discipline and the work involved. And I never forgot that, and I always told him that. I was very proud of him. I'm proud of his career, too. Always wanting to do the right thing. Always acting with style and class.
What's a piece of neighborhood logic that you would give to all coming up actors, young actors, people in Hollywood?
Well, I think, again, I go back to a lot of things I always say about neighborhood logic is be real good at what you do and be well-liked. And I don't think you could fail if you do that. I mean, that's just logical, you know, because like I always say, the business is a crapshoot and life is a crapshoot. But I could say one of the most important things, decisions you could ever make in your life is who you marry. So I go back to those people who sent me those emails and say, the idea is to make the right decision before you get married, not after you get married. You know, some people always say, but I love him or I love her. And that's admirable that you love her. But do you like her? Do you like her? See, that's the difference. You can love somebody that you don't like. And that's a problem. You know, they say opposites attract. Yes, they do. But there's a second half to that. Opposites do attract, but they don't stay together too long. That's what happens to them. So a wise guy once said to me, find someone that puts wind in your sails. I think that's important. And I say that again. Find someone who puts wind in your sails. Life is hard enough. You want somebody who is like putting some wind in your sails. Life is like carrying luggage. You know the old saying, I don't want to go out with her or him. They have too much baggage. Well, yeah. Well, you know what? Find somebody that doesn't have too much baggage or at least has the baggage but is a happy person. Otherwise, wow, it's not going to be good. Okay? So, again, use your neighborhood logic. If you didn't grow up in a neighborhood like I did, watch the show and learn it. But I think that's important that you're with somebody who's not weighs you down, who puts wind in your sails. Thanks for coming. Thanks for coming to the show. And we'll see you again.